Now, the next thing that I had to talk about here, and this was something, again, that just really struck me, was that good leaders remain submissive to the church. And this was particularly obvious, with Peter and Paul, who are the two great apostles. They never do anything outside of the approval of the church if they have the ability to go and ask the church. So Peter and John were sent by the apostles to Samaria in Acts 8 in response to the work going on there. Peter and Philip go back to Jerusalem, and one's assuming that they're going back to report. So Peter didn't just say, look, I'm the chief apostle, and I think this is a really important thing. I'm going to go check it out, and I'll tell you guys about it. See you later. No, he is sent by the apostles, he and John. And yet, sometimes they do step out ahead of the church. Now, like Paul, I mean, one of the things that you keep seeing in his, like in Chrysostom, or I think other fathers too, they make a big deal of the fact that he wasn't taught by men, but by God. And yet, he's taught directly by Christ, but what does Christ do? He sends him to Ananias, was that the name of the man that baptized him? And I think it's Chrysostom who says, and he wasn't a well-known leader. He was just a member of the church, and that was for the humility of Paul. So he was still in submission to the church, and he does go and submit his teaching eventually to the apostles when it becomes an issue. Up till then it's not an issue, and when it is, he comes and he submits his teaching. And then you have the very obvious place where Peter sort of steps out ahead of everybody is when he goes to Cornelius. But he has these visions that tell him to do this, and it's not like he comes back from these, he's coming downstairs after these visions, and there's these people from Cornelius at his doorstep. And he doesn't say, let me go back to Jerusalem and ask the other apostles. He recognizes that this is from God because he's discerning enough to do it. But then he goes back and submits himself. So he's not even in charge of the council. James, because he is now the bishop of Jerusalem, this is James the brother of the Lord, not James the brother of John, because he's already died. He's already been martyred. He's the chief apostle, but he's not in charge of the council, and he very humbly submits himself. And so these are, I think, two very important things that dovetail with a leader of the church. Is the leader will sometimes have to step out ahead, because that's what he is. He's a leader. But when he steps out ahead, then he submits himself to the church, as soon as he can. And if the whole church says, you took a false step, then that leader will, humbly acknowledge that. So let's see. In the case of Peter and John, interestingly enough, the two places where they, are stepping out without asking are when they have received visions. Now, that reminds me of Mother Victoria's advice of, if you ever see a vision, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to cross yourself and say, I am not worthy to receive visions. Okay, so if I start getting visions of I'm supposed to go off and do such and such and so a thing, I need to run to Mother Victoria and Father Lawrence and Archbishop Benjamin as fast as I can. You know, I'm not in that kind of a position. I don't have that Christian maturity and discernment and all the other things that takes. Anyway, but again, if you are in a position of leadership, and in a way, as you know, as you were saying, Sister Pearl, since we all are, you know, we all have situations where, like, you're in the middle of something and you have to do something, and you know, you have to make the best decision you can. But then you go back and you know, and talk to your priest or whoever, you know, is in authority over you, and you know, have the humility to accept what they say about it. Okay, so then there's the very obvious story where Peter and Paul have this interaction where Paul rebukes Peter. What was the situation? Who remembers? They were having dinner. That's true. Who was having dinner?
Peter goes to the Gentiles and then goes back into his Jewish form.
Yeah, basically, Peter had been going around eating with the Gentiles, and then some Jews came, and Peter was concerned and started... and stopped eating with the Gentiles, and Paul rebukes him and basically says, you're being a total hypocrite. And interestingly enough, there is some difference of opinion on whether that was a real rebuke or whether it was a teaching situation that Peter and Paul sort of put themselves in together. It's Chrysostom who thinks that it was a teaching situation. Here, let's hopefully this is enough of this passage to follow it. This is what Chrysostom is saying about this on his homily on Galatians 2, verses 11 and 12. So it says, so he's talking about, you know, Peter was eating with the Gentiles. But when people came from Judea and saw him preaching there in this way, he gave up this practice, fearing to disturb them, and changed his ways. He had a twofold purpose, to avoid scandalizing the Jews and to give Paul a plausible reason to confront him. For if Peter himself, having included circumcision in his preaching in Jerusalem, had changed in Antioch, those of Jewish origin would have surmised that he did this from fear of Paul, and his disciples would have condemned his excessive complaisance. And so Paul rebukes, and Peter voluntarily gives way. It is like the master who, when upbraided, keeps silent so that his disciples might more easily change their ways. So as I understand that, what Chrysostom thinks was that Peter would have scandalized the Jews and made it look like he was scared of Paul, and then that would have set up, you know, some kind of an unpleasantness and maybe split the church, as there already were problems, as we see, you know, where those who say, I'm of Apollos, I'm of Paul, I'm of Peter. And so from a fear of that happening, Peter basically sets himself up to get a rebuke from Paul, which Paul gives, and Peter voluntarily gives way. Now, that may be the case. It may be the case, as some of the other fathers talk about, that they really think, you know, that this wasn't a setup, that Peter really had, out of inappropriate fear, become somewhat hypocritical. In either case, Peter's showing some serious humility. Either by setting himself up and looking like he's a hypocrite when he isn't, or accepting the fact that he's being a hypocrite. And in either case, that gives some very seriously good lessons to the church. It's like nobody is above rebuke, and a person who doesn't accept rebuke humbly is not the best leader, or at least they need to, you know, work on themselves. So I think a couple of takeaway lessons for us from this little interaction between Peter and Paul, you know, we don't have to be perfect. At least we don't have to start out perfect. In heaven, you're going to be perfect. But I don't have to start without any sin, okay? I just have to accept rebuke and change accordingly. I can't lead others or myself or really be much of a Christian at all without humility. And then the last one, this has to do with something that Chrysostom says, because, you know, it does say that Peter had stopped eating with the Gentiles because of fear of the Jews. And Chrysostom, this is his comment: "He was not afraid of his own endangerment, for one who had no fear at the beginning would have all the less at that time. Rather, he feared their apostasy. Just as Paul himself says to the Galatians, 'I am afraid I have labored over you in vain.'" So the takeaway lesson there is, just like anger is okay as long as it's anger in the right direction, fear is okay too, as long as you're fearing the right things. You know, what should I fear most in life? I should fear anything that's going to take me away from God. Okay, and of course, in a sense, in a holy sense, you should fear God. But, you know, so I should fear God in the sense of, you know, not ever wanting to do anything against him. Now, how many of you, and you don't have to raise your hands or anything, but how many of you have had an experience where there was somebody who loved you very, very much, a very, very good person, and you did something just absolutely wrong to them? And because they were a very, very good person, they didn't get mad at you. And if you can remember what the look on their face was like, you know, it's like what you fear is ever seeing that look again. You know, it's like, I've sinned against a good person who loves me. And when it's just me sinning against another sinner, and that's still, you know, blazoned in my mind and heart of what I did to that person, and then leads me in a way to have a good fear of, like, I'm never doing that again, because, like, I don't ever want to see that expression again. That's the way we should fear God, you know, not because he's mean, but because he's love. And to sin against the love that dies for you is a horrendous thing. And so if I realize that, then I should have a fear, you know, of doing anything that is against him.